Hello and welcome to PPC Town Hall. My name is Fred Valles. I'm your host. I'm also the CEO and co-founder at Optimizer, a PPC management tool. For today's episode, we're going to do something a little different. We have more guests than usual, but that's because we've invited some of the partners responsible for the PPC survey. PPC survey was filled out by more than 1,000 advertisers, agencies, and in-house teams. And in this, they answered a lot of questions and they gave some insight into where they're going to spend more money and less money over the years to come. They told us which tools and capabilities in the ad platforms they like and dislike, and how they're thinking about generative AI and its impact on our industry. So a lot of great insights, and we've got some great partners from PPC Survey to tell us what they think about these results. So let's head into the studio and get started with another episode of PPC Town Hall. All right, and here are my guests for today. We have a couple of returning people. So we have Mike Ryan. Hello, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me. I think it's my third time on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, we love talking to you. We have Ed Leek. I think you've been on once before.
Just the once. Now it's once, twice. So it's once too many now.
Well, you know, I think the episode that you were on was one of our most highly rated ones. You bring a good audience, so we're very happy to have you back.
It's the hair, Fred. It's the hair.
Actually, measuring the height of the hair, I think Mike Ryan's got you beat. Then you might come in second there.
And then Wayne, rub it in, guys.
at least Wayne until still have hair. And then our first timer on the show, we have Vaynant, and he sort of the mastermind behind the PPC survey. So he's really the main guy today. So thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So Vaynant, you being sort of the mastermind, like I said, behind the PPC survey, this is the second time that you've done this. First time that I've been involved with Optimizer. But tell us a little bit more about the effort and why you started it and what's coming out here soon.
Yeah, so a bit more than 2 years ago, we with a couple of other companies, it started actually by just wanting to have the data, trying to find some benchmarks, some opinions from PPC professionals about certain topics, and did some research back then. And I found, there were some surveys, but they were already pretty old and pretty high level, didn't go really deep. And That's how it started. It's like, why not really do it again? PPC Hero did a survey once, Marketing Land did a survey once. They all seem to do it just once and then never again.
And I think I know why.
Why?
I think when I look at you and all the work that you put in, once you're like, wow, that was a lot more than I anticipated.
That could be. They thought never again after. Yeah. And then actually I made it bigger and more complex. And all those surveys, one of the things that people will see or maybe know from the previous edition, those surveys, they would just averages over the whole population. And what I like about this survey, we ask you about your role, your company type, your spend level, your geography, your location. And it allows us to segment the data whenever it makes sense. So we can compare. So we ask different groups the same question, and we can look at like how does the US compare to Europe, right? And sometimes it's similar, sometimes it's quite different. And I think those differences make it extra interesting.
And so some people will be listening to this on the podcast. So we'll try to tell you what we see on screen. And for the folks watching on YouTube or LinkedIn video, so we got some slides here. So here's one that shows kind of the global distribution of the survey.
Yeah, I'm going to give a bit of background on who filled in the survey, and then each of you will comment on, I think, like sort of 8 results, and there's 50 plus. So this is just a tip of the iceberg of what people can read in a week or so whenever it comes out. The last time we did, we had 540 people that did the survey 2 years ago, and we were ambitious, the 7 of us, right? So there are the other partners that will show on the screen for many slides. Let's go for 1,000, although no online marketing survey ever had more than 1,000 that I know of respondents. And we managed to get 1,138. And I hope it's visible that, and I can highlight a bit how it was distributed across the world. So 40% came out of Europe or continental Europe. We like to treat the UK separately as they as they're used to, and UK and Ireland 15%, North America being US and Canada 30%. Those were the three main regions, and then you see it kind of gets a bit lower numbers for the rest of the world. The gray areas we didn't get responses from, and that kind of makes sense because we're an English survey targeting, you know, Google-minded industries and people, so a bit less of those China and Russia, for example. But so we have that I know of, the biggest survey ever done across PPC or online marketing professionals, which allows us to have solid data on many topics. We go pretty deep in a survey, and even if we go really deep, and that means that not everyone, not all 1,100 people get the same questions, that we still have always a couple of hundred that will answer the same question, making it pretty significant.
And that was a really important point, I think, about the survey, is that it was going out to agencies as well as freelancers. And so there was a lot of branching logic in those surveys to make sure that people actually answered about the topics they should know about. Yep. We weren't asking, you know, sort of the CMO level person how often they work with scripts, because that's probably not what they're going to know about.
No, exactly. Yeah. If you were more like in a leadership role, you had a pretty short survey. If you were like a hands-on specialist, it probably took you 20 minutes to do the whole survey. But it was worth it, I hope, because it gave us a lot of insights. And this is the distribution, indeed, across, you know, across company types, where, you know, I want to just highlight agencies is a majority there. And if you add up the freelancers, that's actually 75% together serving clients, 20% doing it in-house, and just 5%, and that's always the toughest audience to reach, are brands that hire an agency. So what we could not do, like we couldn't do 2 years ago, what we hope for, but it's tough, is have solid data on what do clients think about their agency or, you know, the industry, and how, what do they think is important. And I would still love to have enough of those to really make it solid, but maybe next time, or maybe we'll find a sort of separate way to reach those people. Because those people are not, you know, on search engine land and on LinkedIn reading all the latest PMax news. So we have to reach them another way.
That's right. Next time. And then as far as their experience, talk about that a little bit.
Well, as you can see on this chart, pretty experienced audience that we managed to reach. If you go to the, if you look at the first parts of less than 1 or 1 to 2 years, that's actually a minority. Most people, I was surprised to see 30% with more than 10 years of experience. Like, people are not getting tired of this apparently after 10 years, just keep doing it and filling in surveys. So that's kind of cool, because that means that, you know, they have some perspective when they answer these questions, and that's helpful. Right.
And then the distribution of where they advertise, I guess no surprise there. Most people are advertising on Google.
Just for the to make sure that people don't see this as kind of a spend distribution or something, this is just, we ask, like, you know, which channels does your team or do you use? Not necessarily how much do you spend on them. I think the most surprising part was Amazon being relatively low here. Maybe not, because it doesn't make sense for every advertiser to be on Amazon. But when they do, they probably spend significantly.
And from my perspective, I mean, so Optimizer covers Amazon PPC as well. We have tools for that. But we find that there's very little overlap between a Google advertiser, typical Google advertiser, and an Amazon marketplace seller / advertiser. So my sense would be just it's a different audience. And given the connections that us have, we probably didn't reach that many Amazon folks.
Yeah, could be. Yeah.
What rules did they play?
Well, not, again, I think we have a nicely distributed roles here. Majority being the what we call individual contributor, right? Whether that's a specialist, consultant, analyst, it's called differently in different companies, but it's the person doing the hands-on campaign management. Obviously, there are also more of those than there are managers or executives, but I think we also managed to reach a decent amount of those. So when it makes sense in the report, we will split those roles out, and we ask them different questions. Yeah.
All right. So so that's kind of who answered the survey. So now let's take a look at what came out of it. So priorities for 2024. What do people care about?
This is where Ed will.
I can lead with this. I think it's pretty obvious for anyone that's listening to this. The top priority came in as AI and automation. And I think if you were a betting person, you probably could have bet that that would have been top, and then followed by campaign performance. So this, I don't think there's a huge amount to say on this slide, other than if we consider that 75% of respondents were client-facing, client-serving, then look at the bottom of this table. We have client retention as a measly 1%. So it isn't a priority, which is ironic because retention is sort of the priority, but never mind. So yeah, this is juxtaposition. Everyone's looking at AI. So there's your edge. If you're serving clients, just improve your retention. You're probably going to outperform a lot of people who are looking the opposite way. Tell me I'm right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And that's kind of the downside of a survey, right? Like sometimes you can't answer multiple things. And so the fact that client retention is sort of that last point doesn't mean people don't care. It's just they think they're going to lose their client because they're not figuring out AI and automation. So it's almost the same answer, like you said. But I'm also a little bit not surprised, I guess, but it's interesting to me that I think the push towards automation, literally that's been the thing for the last, ever since mobile advertising stopped being the thing, which was like, what now, 15, 20 years ago, it's been about automation. And that's taken the form of like, oh, what do I do with Google's automated bid management? Oh, what do I do when PMax comes in? Oh, what do I do when generative AI is taking over? And it's like every couple of years, it's a different flavor of what automation means. So I can see why that's still a top of mind for people.
Yeah. And to be fair, we did group it, AI and automation. They could be two separate categories of vote, can't they? Because AI is specifically AI. So automation could be running a script, which isn't AI. So there is a, I think there's a bit of overlap there. But yeah. Maybe the next slide's more.
Yeah, just good to mention for this one. This is kind of a summary of the open-ended question, right? So people could type in whatever they wanted. And then I had the fun job of trying to tag that in certain themes. Actually used quite a bit of ChatGPT's data analyst for that, but required quite a few prompts. And actually ChatGPT made this word cloud eventually after me trying to get it right for 2 hours. So AI and automation was often mentioned by many people in one sentence. Sometimes it was just AI. So that's why I kind of decided to make it one theme. And as on the right hand side, it's, you know, people mention things like, you know, I need to implement it more. I need to make it more part of our process, of our workflow, that kind of stuff.
Kind of joking here, but yeah, maybe the AI was self-aware and was like, oh, maybe I should put myself at the top of the list of most important thing when you asked it to categorize.
Maybe, but I double checked.
Okay. Yeah, ask it if that's what it was trying to do. But so that's kind of what's top of mind for people. So we're kind of rolling into that then. We have the Google Ads feature satisfaction. I thought that was one of the most interesting pieces of the last version of the survey. So I find it very fascinating to see what's coming out this year. But yeah, let's take a look at the question of how satisfied are you with the results and usefulness of a number of very specific features. So
yeah, Fred, you obviously did your homework and looked at the previous one. I didn't. So I don't know the before and after of this, but I think this is an interesting juxtaposition of people wanting AI and automation, and yet the top three things or four things are anti-AI and automation. It's the stuff I have control over. Google Ads Editor, it's a very manual controlling thing. Custom columns, that's because I can control them. Scripts, I'm in control. So, oh, look, exact match. You're kind of in control. And then conversely, you've got, I can't see, it's very small, but at the bottom, you've got auto apply recommendations in the gutter, general recommendations. What else have we got? Demand gen, optimization score. Broad's got to be in there, surely. Yes, broad match keywords. So, yeah, it's to me, that says people are interested in and they want automation, but they're not confident of the automation tools that Google's given them entirely. Now, in fairness, we do have TROAS near the top and probably TCPA. So the bidding engine's pretty solid and people should be happy with that. It saved them quite a bit of time, but there's this interesting, as I say, juxtaposition between what people are interested in and actually what Google's giving them and how dissatisfied they appear to be with some of that automation.
Yeah, and that's fascinating, right? I mean, sort of what do you make of that? Like, is this, as an industry, we're just such control freaks? Because we came from a place where everything in Google was everything. And this is interesting to me. So Google Ads, I mean, there was no conversion tracking. There were like broad match didn't even find typos or spelling variations. So literally everything you had to do in the early days of when it was called AdWords was like you'd have to manually figure out every single keyword, every single bid, every single ad, right? And so we grew up in that. Whereas Facebook and social came in much later when AI and automation was much more developed. And so it asked you to control fewer things, and people who grew up with that probably are more okay with giving away control. So do you think this is kind of like a remaining artifact of the early days, and over time that's going to go away and people are going to be okay with giving up more control? Where is this all coming from as an
industry? I mean, if you look at the distribution of experience, it was balanced to the higher side of experience. So more experienced people are more entrenched. Typically, I am experienced. I'm entrenched. I like a spreadsheet. I like a table. Less so an auto recommendation. So there's probably a little bit of entrenchment. And then I think there's also expectations. I think AI is promising the world, but we're yet to see it deliver. And I think once we get to a point where automation becomes truly dependable, then people will flip quite quickly because they'll realize, oh, this thing can do a lot of my work that I didn't enjoy anyway. I was kidding myself that I wanted to sit staring at my Google Ads account. This thing now does it. Oh, I can now work on my client retention, which I was ignoring before, which might be a bit more important. I think there's also probably an edge for people like yourself, Fred, and Wynand, and me to some degree with the SaaS products in finding automations that aren't Google biased that people want to use. So, you know, Google's losing the battle it's fighting in this field, I think, because their motivations are not always the same as the client. So for them to put together an automation suite that will fit everyone is that an impossible task? Probably. I said a lot of things there. So
I'll say yes. I mean, I worked at Google, right? And so one of the things that we discussed, I know, have I mentioned it? but one of the things that we considered relatively early on was, should we like split AdWords into multiple versions of AdWords for different verticals and make it easier in that way? And so like, no, and then the decision was made, it's going to be one platform with like multiple layers, like an onion where you kind of get deeper into it, but there's not a separate version for travel, for retail. But that then also meant, like you're saying, that, you know, there's, you're building this product for millions of advertisers, so it's very hard to meet everyone's needs at the same time. And that may lead to some dissatisfaction in pockets. But I think the other point here is that when we put the survey out, as it's obviously going to PPC experts, people with a lot of years under their belt, as we saw. But if Google was asking, like, is Google Ads working better today than it was 10 years ago for the average advertiser who's not that aware of, like, what does a broad match keyword really do? Like, it's probably working better today, right? So the results on average are going to be better, but the experts who want to take that extra level of control and like to whom 5% improvement in results does matter, when you're spending $1 million a month, they're probably a little bit less satisfied with these things.
I want to still point out that maximized conversion value using target ROAS has won the popularity compared to, for example, manual CPC. And Performance Max has a higher satisfaction than standard shopping in its overview. So there's areas where, you know, people have, you know, accepted that that kind of black box automation, and there's areas where they haven't, which is at the bottom there. I do think some people also not appreciating some of the features at the bottom, like add customizers or add variations, which are genuinely useful, and it's up to you how you use them. So I was surprised to see pretty low satisfaction scores there. It's like clear cut everywhere. Yeah.
Application of medium as well. Sorry, just as a very final thing, I won't hang around on this, but yeah, application of the medium. So people dissatisfied in YouTube ads. If you know how to use YouTube ads and you're using them for the right type of audience and you've got the right type of creative, they're brilliant, but they're not for everyone. And I think there's a little bit of that there. But you are right. PMax is sort of middle of the table and the scorecard. I think the bidding stuff could be higher, quite frankly. I just thought it was very interesting that all the manual things were at the top.
All right. So, Performance Max, people seemed then relatively happy with sort of in that orange band. So, Mike, I know you've never talked about Performance Max, as far as I know, but we talk about it all the time. Most popular topic. What was the joke one of you guys was saying?
Yeah, I said that you could burp the alphabet and say PMax at the end, and you would still get like 100 likes on LinkedIn or wherever. There's no PMax fatigue yet. People are hungry for more content about PMax, more information about PMax. Because personally, sometimes I feel a bit fatigued by it, to be honest. I have to say though, I like it better than Smart Shopping. If Smart Shopping had stuck around in the form that it was, I don't know. I just found it so kind of boring to operate, boring to think about in a lot of ways. And I think that PMax is a superior product to Smart Shopping. But you're probably already reading ahead of me here, looking at some of these challenges that people face with Performance Max. Because although, interestingly, we just saw in the last, as Vinan pointed out, we saw that satisfaction is higher with Performance Max than with Standard Shopping at this point. Which I think is quite a revelation, because you hear a lot of grumbling still. But that grumbling is directed at things here, like we see that 2/3 of respondents are challenged by the lack of granular control and steering. Half of respondents are challenged by the ability to learn and understand how to improve performance. And then just rounding out the top three, nearly half have problems with the transparency about the system's decision-making process. So that right there is a black box, kind of that lack of transparency into decision-making, classic black box challenge. Back at the top of the list, we were just talking about control so much. I don't want to add too much more on there, but I think it becomes a question of, how do you use this better? How do you I have switched this thing on. I've arrived at a certain level. What next? Where do I go from here? Or when things go wrong, why? How do I diagnose that? How do I troubleshoot that? What can I do about it? And the fact is that, more than 80% of advertisers have adopted this technology. The adoption went very fast. We all know the story, because adoption of Smart Shopping was already high, and then they just migrated it over. So they kind of immediately captured that market share or adoption level. To put it differently. But in that context, how do you differentiate? And this lack of granular control, you might think of promotional controls like modifiers that are no longer available. You might also think about the very limited placement reporting. And there are workarounds like this, like scripts and so on. But it's understandable that people have these concerns, in my opinion.
I'm curious, Mike, do you think Google is moving in the right direction, because they're trying to improve this?
I definitely think so. As I said, my own satisfaction with Performance Max is higher than with Smart Shopping. We have a sample size of 444 on this question, but my sample size of one is I'm happier than I used to be. And we've seen that they have made kind of some concessions. For example, with brand exclusions. This was a topic they didn't really want to roll out negative keywords in the UI. Like, there are some ways to add negative keywords at a campaign level, but a compromise that they were willing to live with was to then offer to take on this topic of brand traffic specifically and say, okay, here's a feature that you can use for that, brand exclusions. Another example, search term reporting was not possible at all in smart shopping campaigns. And they've created this consumer spotlight report that has, it's a little different than the classic search term report, but it's a search term insights. And they, you know, they've invested some resources there to make that available to people. So I think that these are positive signs. You know, they hear us, they're willing to make concessions. The thing to remember is that it will always be on their terms.
All right. Do you think that you say PMax is better than Smart Shopping? Is that today, or do you think PMax at launch was better than Smart Shopping?
It's a great question. I think that it was better at launch, and I think that it has gotten better. So to talk about that, yes, there were complaints from people that it seemed like a half-baked product when it launched. There was odd things like no item ID reporting, for example. There's really some very basic things that you might expect that were kind of missing. But from the start, there was more of a focus on audiences that I really appreciate compared to Smart Shopping. And I think, you know, it just structurally made more sense to me than Smart Shopping did. And then, yeah, they've evolved on it from there. So I think that it was and is better.
Okay.
Than Smart Shopping.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting too, because if you looked at the satisfaction, PMax with feed, which is what you're talking about basically, that had a much higher satisfaction than PMax without feed.
Mm. Good point there. I'm letting my e-commerce bias show. And, you know, PMax for lead generation is a different topic. And I definitely, I think there for sure are more concerns and less satisfaction there. Concerns about the quality of the traffic that it delivers. And I think that there's more heavy lifting that you as an advertiser have to do to really guide the algorithm and make that make sense. And depending on your region, like CRM integrations, not as simple as it could be here in Europe, for example, with privacy laws. And so it's definitely a topic that for e-commerce, though, with this product targeting rather than lead targeting, it works better.
Yeah. I think just to finish
on
that.
Beg your pardon. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say on the lead gen thing, I've rattled on about this. I think PMax for lead gen is weak because of many different things. If you can't max out your search campaigns, I wouldn't be considering PMax. I think PMax is an experimental thing for lead gen. So I think sometimes people misuse it and they get results that are maybe cost conversion is lower than they expect and they're happy, but actually the quality of the lead is not there for them. So
yeah, that makes total sense. And I ran into a campaign yesterday where I saw that conversions were being reported for queries related to something free. When that company wasn't selling something free. And so that kind of spoke to a mismatch, I think, in the way conversion and like a lead was probably being put in as a conversion, but not the ultimate sale, right? And the more that people use automation, whether it be PMax or automated bidding, and you kind of give it that incomplete conversion action in lead gen, it's just going to keep giving you more and more of that. And that leads to the low quality of leads that we're talking about. Whereas I think in e-commerce, things are a little bit more clear, like some, and a lot of companies still don't look at returns that happen, right? But at least if they put in the basket and they checked it out, like that is a legitimate conversion right there. And it's a little bit easier to report that at that moment than in a lead gen, which usually takes a lot longer to get to that final sale. Mm-hmm. All right. So we have a couple of other points. So satisfaction with AI. So AI being the top topic on people's minds, like how satisfied are people with what AI is doing? Vaynant, do you want to walk us through this slide?
Mike will tell a bit more, I think, but I think it's good to maybe mention what we mean with AI here, that it is the, you know, the ChatGPT, Gemini, whatever, that type of, you know, external AI that people have been playing around with. And we first asked, that's not on the screen, How often do you use that even for all these activities that you see listed here? And if you said that you used it sometimes or often, or maybe even always, then you got the follow-up question just for the activities that you said that you used it sometimes. We did the same thing, by the way, for the Google satisfaction. And so we don't ask people that never use something how satisfied they are with that, unless they've been lying, of course. But then this is the results. Yeah, there are some interesting things there, but maybe I want to give the mic to Mike first to see what his thoughts are, and then we can all comment to see what you think.
Yeah, I mean, what jumps out to me is that satisfaction actually seems a bit on the low side. Like the way to read this is that, you know, let's look at that top line, writing emails in green. So 71% of the people who are using this often are satisfied or very satisfied. And that's actually the only activity on here, writing emails. It's the only one to reach above 70% and get in that green zone. And I think that's, you know, not positive that most of these things are yellow or red among people who are using them more often. I wonder if you're using it more often and you're there's a low satisfaction, I'm a little surprised by that. Why do you continue to use it? Maybe they're trying to figure it out.
Exactly. I can give you a bit of background on that, because if you look at the list of most popular ones, so just the ones that answer how often you use it, it looks pretty much the same order of things. So my interpretation of that is, as the more people learn how to use it, for example, for writing emails, the more satisfied they will get with the results. And budget management was also at the bottom of how AI was used. Not many people, so we had to ask a very small group of people because not many use it for budget management. And probably they were just trying to figure it out and they're not satisfied yet, I guess, or maybe they never will. We don't know, but it feels like that. It feels like you have to build experience with it. You have to, you know, maybe learn the right prompts or whatever. And then you get more satisfied along the way. And the top parts are just the things that people have been using the longest, which makes sense, right? Writing stuff is what comes to mind first.
It's a large language model. You would expect it to be good at writing, right? So those writing tasks like emails or ads, that makes a lot of sense. And then I think there's a little bit of a misexpectation too, where I just did a masterclass on AI and PPC, and like the most common question I got was like, can you use it for forecasting? Can you use it to predict like average CPCs? And it's like, no, that's not what it does. Like it unless you give it access to a database with those actual numbers and you get into maybe a code interpreter sort of implementation, that's not what it's going to do. If you ask it like, hey, what's the CPC on average for this keyword? Its job is to like statistically predict what's the next word in the sentence. And so it's going to make it up. It's going to have no actual meaning. And so if people believe it's doing that, then yeah, of course, they're going to be disappointed with budget management, or they understand it can't do it. So hence, again, it gets a low score.
Yeah, I think this is
why. I also find it interesting. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, satellite bloody delay. You're quite right, Fred. And I think this is why expectations and it, I think I said this in the previous slide. I just don't think a lot of these tools are ready for prime time yet. I still think, if you've tested 20 AI products, you'll probably find 19 that were crap, buggy, you won't use ever again. I just don't think we're there yet for prime time. And also, will we even get there? Will someone in the general public get to the point where they will have access to the level of data that will enable forecasting, as an example from this list? Will Google or Microsoft give them that kind of data? Who knows? I think there's like Fred just said, there's a mismatch, isn't there, between expectations and the underlying technology.
And then to maybe wrap up on that point, but so the third most highly rated one is writing and editing scripts. And we'll talk about scripts in a minute a little bit more. But I think once people start to understand that they can write a script or write Python code using Code Interpreter through GPT-4, and they can give it a very large data set, and now they can actually start doing budget forecasting or predictions based off of larger data sets and statistical methods they may not have had in-house capabilities for, that's going to actually raise the satisfaction quite a bit. But again, it's one of these things that just takes more time for people to explore, go to conferences, hear how other people have done it before they jump into it themselves. And so I will predict that in the next version of the PPC survey, We're actually going to see much higher scores on statistical things when it comes to Gen AI.
I hope so, for the sake of all my AI stocks. Up only.
Those will be fine regardless. What I'm more worried about is power and water. Those are running out because AI is using all of them.
Yeah, all right, they just need to put them at the bottom of the ocean, Fred. I think they've already started doing that, and then you don't have to worry about water at least.
Okay, so buy scuba diving gear.
That's yeah. Let's talk.
Okay, so changing the level of trust in the ad platform. So, Vedant, maybe tee up the question, and then I'll talk a little bit about this.
Yeah, well, it's a very simple question we asked. We listed out all the app platforms as you see them here, and we just asked, like, compared to a year ago. So this was in Q4 2023, so a couple months ago. Compared to a year ago, has your trust in Google Ads and Meta and all these platforms been considerably lower, slightly lower, about the same, slightly higher, considerably higher? And we explained that by trust, it's not so much in trusting that you will get results from it. That could also maybe for some people mean trust, but we mean like the more pure form of trust, like earned by being transparent, you know, keeping people's best, other people's best interests in mind, the advertiser, the user, et cetera, that type of trust. And well, I think most of the platforms won't be happy when we publish this report and this image.
Right. And so the big one, Google Ads, is fairly negative, as well as Twitter. So let's talk about those two first, right? So I think the timing of when the survey went out was sort of around the same time that the Department of Justice case came against Google, and there were some revelations around auction manipulation. And they were revelations. I don't think these were things that weren't public before. I think they just got a lot more exposure. And so people who didn't pay attention to the fact that auctions don't always work the way you think they might work might have been shocked, and that reduced trust. And then you put that together with Google's continuous evolution of systems like Broad Match, which, you know, over time, I think they get better, but in like micro moments, they get worse. And there's always like examples of, okay, this is where it messed up. That also leads to then sort of that decline in trust from Google. And then over the past year, they've had a number of cases where there have been bugs in the system. And for all Google's good intentions, like, the system hasn't done what it was meant to do. And I think Google usually owns up to that. But again, I think that's sort of, and I think that's the broader point, is that there's a mistrust in automation, or there's a lack of confidence in some of these automations that they're always going to have the advertiser's best interests at heart. So I think that's Google. And actually, anyone have comments on Google before we jump into Twitter?
I can only second what you said. I mean, I was following that Department of Justice stuff topic pretty closely. And I guess the only thing it's interesting to me that it kind of blew over. Like, I don't know. I think it concerned, people really, the nerds in the industry more than, I don't know how much of it really reached advertisers. So as much as that probably did hurt the survey, I actually think Google kind of got away easy in the end.
It's David versus Goliath, isn't it? Google's colossal. The problem is Goliath in this instance is not, I mean, he is fighting us, but he's also giving us a little belly rub by giving us the best search engine for intent-driven customers and leads and so on. It's the best platform. You have to advertise on it if you're going to advertise for most people. So I think there's that frustration there. It's like, I've got to pay the devil to do business. I think that's the frustration that a lot of people feel. And I get that, but it's the best product for advertising. So you kind of better the devil, you know, isn't it? And you got to enjoy the belly rubs from time to time.
As long as there's some, like, you know, some treats as well, like bacon bits or something, then.
You sound like a great date, Mike.
And on that note, I know we're not at the end of the show, but our friend Mike does have to run to another meeting. But thank you, Mike, for really sharing a lot of what you think about PMax and some other thoughts on the survey. So we'll let you go.
Thanks
very much. If you want to learn more about SMEC and what you do, tell them where to find you.
Yeah, sure. You can find us at smarter-ecommerce.com. You can find me on Twitter or LinkedIn with the handle Mike Ryan Retail. I'm absolutely mortified that my final word was some weird thing about bacon bits, but these are decisions that I have to live with for the rest of my life. Thanks so much for having me.
Bye, Mike.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.
Cheers, Mike.
Okay, so let's take a look at Twitter next. So I think Twitter is no surprise that that came in at a lower rating because the company was, well, Twitter no longer is Twitter. It's now X because Elon Musk bought it. It's not been an advertiser-friendly company. It's becoming maybe more of a radical platform. So obviously from a brand safety perspective, that's not going to earn you high points.
I don't agree with that statement.
Okay.
Just to have a balanced point of view, because you are in California.
I didn't think Twitter supported balanced point of view, but...
I think it bloody does. Well, Google controls the SERP. Facebook controls the message. So Twitter being a bit more open. Yeah, you've got the nutty extreme lefties and the extreme right. But actually, if you look at the central viewpoints, people are expressing themselves a bit more freely. Community Notes is the best social media invention. Elon Musk's tweets get community noted if he says something incorrect. That's a brilliant... Is everything right there? No. But like I said, you can't get impartial information from Google when you look at certain things, particularly the news. It's incredibly biased. But I think what this shows us is that brilliant 50-50 split division of the left and the right. Like if we're going to politicalize it, it's like half the people hate it, half the people don't mind it or they like it. I blame American politics, Fred. It's your fault. But yeah, it is going to be divisive. And you got to remember, there is a big narrative towards Elon, and for better or worse, he's bit back. He's been pushed into a corner like an angry dog. He's bit a few hands, and they're going for him. I hope he bites a few more hands because it's quite entertaining, if we're honest. And he's
it is entertaining, and I think maybe it goes to the bigger point that we saw earlier, which is the advertisers who answered this survey. They clearly want control, and I think when Twitter lacks the control, and I agree with your point. I mean, so you can say anything on Twitter, and there is correction if something's wrong, but it's not liberal or conservative. It's for everyone, right? There's no real restrictions anymore. But that also means there's lack of control. As an advertiser, you don't know you're going to go into a place that sort of mimics what your brand is. And so maybe that's kind of where that negativity comes from, that people just don't trust that they can advertise and be shown alongside something that's not going to be offensive to half of their consumers.
I think, you know what? I think it puts more pressure on the advertiser to do good advertising, because I have seen adverts on there that get a positive rapport from the audience. But I think it adds a bit of pressure. You've got to do something that's going to entertain the crowd. It's like you're a gladiator in the Roman arena on there a little bit. And I like a little bit of risk. I kind of like it. And I kind of don't like it, but the whole thing's been very politicized, unfortunately. We'll see. Hey, the user growth's up this year, which is surprised a lot of people. So we'll see. I'm more active on there now, giving Ellen my $8 a month because obviously he needs it. Very poor man. Very poor.
Yeah, one of the things we don't show in this presentation is that the more experienced the PPC professionals are, the more likely it is they still use Twitter. So it's also becoming kind of a bit of an old school thing. Like the younger generations are sometimes don't even have a Twitter account, and so that's also interesting to see.
Yeah. Are you twerking?
So Meta Ads is the
no TikTok for me.
Yeah, you on TikTok, Ed?
I'm too old. I'm 42 this year.
Oh my god. But Meta, so that's where the grandpas and grandmas hang out on social media, Facebook. I don't quite know why they have that slightly lower perception from 30.
I think they always have this bad rep. I think for years now, it's not necessarily, I don't think it's a 2023 thing for Meta. It's kind of an ongoing thing. Just lower kind of likability factor compared to the other platforms, I think. Like more like a necessary, some bad shit happened over the past years, and not everyone is a fan of the Meta CEO. So,
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that as well, Wine, and I think still a lot of bad blood, as there will be with Google and Twitter. I think it'd be very difficult for those, the three majors. Microsoft's getting away with this because I think it's the other three would struggle. It doesn't matter. Elon Musk could literally shit kittens and people would still hate him. So you can't get around that. And I think we're going to get the positive negative bias in it against the big three. Has Meta got better or worse? I don't know. It's still a good, fundamentally, it's still a good ad platform with very good targeting and a huge audience. But yeah, it's maturing, isn't it, the audience? So that will evolve over time. Yeah.
You're right. I mean, there's the polarizing CEOs like Zuckerberg and Musk. And then there's Satya Nadella, who is not really polarizing in any way. So it's more like, I mean, and Microsoft doesn't especially polarize. It's just an old company that does interesting stuff and is part of most people's workflows and kind of is what it is. And I feel like Google is also in that space where, you know, their CEOs have never been very polarizing. And maybe that helps them be get more of a neutral rating. Okay, so that's the platform thing. So let's talk about scripts. This is the final thing, and then we'll talk about the top 50 PPC survey a bit and the methodology behind that. But when we asked people how many scripts do you run in accounts, the average was 3.8. Yeah, and hopefully those are 3.8 scripts that I've written that you've copied into your account. But yeah, so as a big scripts guy, that makes me happy to see that scripts had high satisfaction ratings. It obviously ranks high on the automation scale, and a majority of people seem to be using them. Only about 19% of respondents said they do not use scripts at all. The other thing that I thought was interesting was when asked what automation and GPT is good at, writing scripts was that number three, I believe, on the list. To me, this is fascinating. And so kind of what I've been saying is in the age of AI and GPT, you no longer should ever say the answer like, I can't. The answer should be, I haven't yet, right? So if you've not been doing scripts because you thought you couldn't, because you can't write code, like those days are over. I've seen examples. I think it was Niels Roymans who used GPT-4. He went on a whiteboard. He sketched out what he needed a script to do, kind of like the flow of decision-making. He took a photo of that. He gave it to GPT-4. It understood the flow of the whiteboard sketch, and it knew how to turn that into an ad script that mostly worked. And when it had mistakes, you just gave those mistakes back, and it would fix them for you. So scripting is for everyone at this point. You know.
That's the potential AI that excites me. That's the... Sorry, Wynand. I always talk over.
Yeah. No worries. My surprise here was the pretty vast majority, pretty low number. If you go on LinkedIn, it feels you have 1 to 5 new scripts going out every week. And now people say, and there are hundreds out there. And now people say, well, on average, I need 5, maybe 10. Great news for Optimizer and TrueClix and other tools, because you're never going to catch everything and monitor anything with just 5 scripts. But I just, by being so visible on especially LinkedIn, I just expected people to actually use it more and just have maybe dozens running because there's most scripts do only one thing, right? And if you want to monitor a lot of stuff or report a lot of stuff, you will probably need more than 5. But that's not
I
what
think
do
the LinkedIn thing, Wynand, is that it's... we shouldn't confuse the work with social engagement. If you want to get some impressions and some likes, talk about or give away a script, a PMax script or whatever. And there's a lot, and I've commented about this just to annoy people and calling myself out. We all do it. Grab that freebie, download it. Wanted that PMax script. You'll never bloody use it. And then another one comes up and you do the same. So I think there's a lot of that. So I think LinkedIn skews the view of scripts a lot. It seems like everyone's written a script, particularly for PMAX. Like Mike said earlier, people don't seem fatigued by PMAX yet. I don't know how people sleep. They're probably dreaming of PMAX.
And there's not a good... I think there's not a good framework around scripts. So once you get into having 20 scripts, like literally 12 years ago, before I started Optimizer, I had a lot of scripts and that turned into Optimizer. But I needed to start writing scripts to check that the scripts were doing what they needed to do or to consolidate the output from the scripts. And at some level, it just stops making sense. There's too many moving parts that you need to like keep running. And Wainan, I think, like you said, it's good for the three of us who all have a software of some sort that eventually we identified this is a great script. It does something useful that people want. Now let's put it into a user interface that's actually easier to use, where there's a big company that's actually making sure it keeps running, where it hands it off, right? Because I think people do want the easy button in their life. And so scripts see these fantastic new ideas, new concepts. And a lot of the flagship tools in Optimizer, by the way, they started as like massive, complicated scripts that are not super easy to use. So long as people have kind of like a continuity of finding new scripts and deploying them, I'm pretty happy because it shows that we're all using some more sophisticated things to better optimize our accounts.
Yeah. Let's go to the list.
All right, let's look at the top 50. So drum roll, the top 50, number one is...
Maybe many people are watching that have been nominated, so to speak, just for this part. They were not listening so far. Now they're like, okay, are they going to... I got to tell a bit more about the list, so let's see how far we can get. But a bit of background info. Yeah, there was, if you've been around a couple of years in PPC, you know there was a PPC hero list every year since 2012, a top 25. They stopped doing it. And while preparing for this survey, I double checked, like, are they ever going to do it again? Because if they're not, this is just the same audience. It's the same. Yeah, it just makes sense to combine the survey with the voting part of the influential list. So reached out to Daniel Gilbert of Brain Labs, double check, which now owns PPC Hero, and he confirmed, no, we're not going to do it anymore. So go ahead. Fred and I had a chat with Jeff Allen from Hennepin, get a bit of background how they did it in the past. And whoa, spoiler. And so what we did, we nominated top 100, as many people know, and based on just their visibility in the PPC space, and that generated a nice list of 100 people. But you could vote for anyone you wanted and didn't have to vote on any of these 100. Everyone could vote on 5 people by the end of the survey. There was no ranking in those 5 people, just 5 votes, which was hard enough already because there's many great people on that list. So many people had to make some tough choices there. And so that's the voting part. I think it's cool that on the website, we made it a bit more interactive, showing people like not just the names and the pictures, but you know, you can link to their social media, to their podcast, YouTube channel, if they have one. So it gives you a feel for what they do, even books if they've written one. Now, the tough part here is, you know, how do you objectively determine the ranking of the final ranking? And for people that told all their friends and family to vote for them, we found out about those votes, those surveys, and they were dismissed. They didn't count. The 1135 you saw at the beginning, it was more like 1400. We had to clean up some mess there that people created for voting purposes. And we can very easily spot a survey that is not serious and that people that have no clue what they're talking about and just want to vote at the end. So those votes were not counted. And so every vote is a real vote by someone that is in the PPC industry. But the votes in the end, maybe the next slide can show you that. That's kind of a screenshot of the thing that again cost quite a bit of time. So I blurred the names here, but this is the top of the list. And I'm not sure how readable it is, but we don't have to go through every detail. I just want people to understand that we've tried to be really balanced in our approach. Okay, you have votes, you have followers on social media, you have engagement on social media. We scrape that with something called Phantom Buster to have the data there. Then we need to normalize everything, right? So someone with 20,000 followers doesn't necessarily get twice the weight as someone with 10,000 followers. You would expect that, but that's not a good way to do it because then you have outliers that just mess everything up. So we had to take all these things into account. And then everything was normalized, everything was weighted. So votes is 17.5% in the end. So even if you got a lot of votes, it doesn't necessarily mean you will end up high, because the takeaway here is if you tick all the boxes, so the social media, the votes, the podcast, if you have one, that helps. If you have a YouTube channel that's popular, that definitely helps. If you have a newsletter, if you've written a book, and if you've did some speaking at conferences, you know, like SMX or PopCon or what have you, or that helps. That was speaking engagement was 15%. So the ad will never be number one because he doesn't speak at conferences. And or maybe writing a book will help Ed. And maybe that will. But
you're never going to please everyone, though, Wine. And no, I mean, at the end of the day, I could write a shit book and do it and go to a conference and vomit on the stage, and I'd get a score here. But at the end of the day, that you can't please everyone. So I think you've got to take this as a little bit of fun for the industry as well. And, you know, there's gratification for people involved here. But
I think we should not
underestimate the work that's gone into this. And Wynand has done a lot of work. So it's as fair as it can be.
I think because people that are partners like Fred and Ed and Mike and some others, are going to be on this list, and as they should be, and as everyone probably expects them to be. So, but that makes everyone be rightfully, we need to be more transparent in how we did this. These are all numbers. You could argue the weightings, but we tried different weightings. It all adds up to more or less the same ranking. It was a top 25. We wanted to make it a top 50 because there's a lot of great people that do lots of stuff between number 25 and 50. Well, you could even argue between 50 and 100 as well, but that should be mentioned and that should deserve a spotlight. So we're gonna release a top 50 together with the report. It will be very interesting for people watching, they're probably curious to see. But I'm hoping the takeaway here is that we really dig into all these areas. And if you want to be higher, if you're on this list and you're in place 50, you want to get higher, maybe now you know, write a book, have a podcast, have a YouTube channel, speak at conferences, that kind of stuff helps. But maybe you don't care about that. Maybe you're super happy with getting your business goals on by using LinkedIn and your newsletter. And that's also fine, of course, because these things are time consuming, all those books and podcasts and YouTube things. But that's actually what we want to reward, actually. But people spending the effort and the time in sharing their knowledge and that stuff, that's basically what this list should be about. So the more platforms you use to do that, the higher you should be on this list. So that's the takeaway here.
And kudos to Wynand again. A lot of thought has gone into this. And the other point, or the only other point I want to make, is sometimes people don't have the opportunity for whatever reason to be invited to a speaking event. And since that is 15% of the total score, that certainly puts you behind the eight ball, right? So, but I would invite anyone to start tweeting, start writing on LinkedIn, right? These are the first places where it's very democratic. Anyone can speak. And then reach out to PPC Town Hall. Like, we love bringing in new voices and giving you an opportunity. And the more of these things you can do and build towards, oh my God, that person really knows what's going on. Like, because I'm not that active in accounts anymore, right? Like, and I'd love talking to people who are, because those are the ones that come with the legitimately cool new ideas. And so I'm ready to give you a platform to build towards being at a conference, or to write for Search Engine Land, because you've gone through PPC Town Hall as one of the steps on that journey, right? So I think all of us are here to give opportunities and democratize this and make sure that anyone can be on this list if they want to be.
Yeah, and that's also one of the things behind the top 100. The top 100 is a longer list where there's a lot of maybe some newer talent or newer names, or what PPC Hero used to call, I think,
rising stars.
Rising stars, yeah. Right? So let's also try to find those as soon as possible, so that conference organizers could go to PPCSurvey.com and look at the top 100. Quickly click to their content and invite those people that are maybe not that well known yet, but have potential to become. Yeah.
And the final thing on this as well: if you're happy, if you're watching this and you're happy, don't feel the pressure to do any of this. At the end of the day, it's a list. Doing what we do is pressure. I don't enjoy recording videos and stuff. I know it's made me money. It's made me successful.
Looks like it.
Hey?
It looks like you do.
It's stressful.
You enjoy it?
Not necessarily. I don't like being in the limelight. This is why I don't do conferences. I do get invited, which is very kind of people. And if you watch this and you've invited me, thank you, but don't take it personally. I'm an introvert in certain ways. So And for people out there, like if you're introverted and you're looking at this going, this is stressing me out thinking about this, don't worry about it, because you don't need to be successful to be on this list. I know I'm on the list somewhere. I mean, I rigged the votes. I mean, cut that. But don't worry about it. Like, if you're happy, be happy. Don't worry about the... This is just, you know, cherry on the cake.
It's fun. Don't take it too seriously.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fantastic place where we, I think, we can end it here. If you're happy, stay happy, be happy, do what you love. And again, this is why the three of us do what we do. We love PPC. We love finding solutions, helping people, finding new strategies. And this PPC survey, thanks again to Wijnand for putting it together and being the spearhead behind that.
Thanks for helping out.
Yeah, we were super happy to sponsor it. But again, I do want to acknowledge the tremendous amount of work that you did in leading many people to contribute. But it was, I think, your effort, and you should be recognized for that. So thank you. Again, the survey will be available. So do take a look at that. It's going to give you great insights, whether you're an agency, an in-house team. It's going to show you the opportunities that exist, what your clients might want more of, what your advertisers are going to want more of. So again, thank you for watching. If you've enjoyed this content and you want to see cool people like Ed, Mike, and Wijnand again, subscribe with that button right there at the bottom. You can find us on all the podcast channels. We're on YouTube and LinkedIn for the video content. And if anyone needs a good PPC tool, there's Optimizer, there's TrueClix,
and AdEvolver.
And the AdEvolver.
Just buy God-tier ads. God-tier ads, everyone. It's cheap. It's cheap. God-tier ad. And it's the best thing
I've ever. It's a one-time purchase.
Great. So anyway, great. Thank you both for being here, and we'll see you for the next one.